One of the world's foremost practitioners says he thinks sound poetry is the only art for which you could be arrested if you did it on a street corner. Dutch sound poet Jaap Blonk has been traveling the Northwest in the last week or so, performing sound poetry monuments like Ursonata by Kurt Schwitters, lesser-known works by John Cage and Dick Higgins, and his own compositions, which range from the fairly straightforward What the President Will Say and Do, and its European counterpart, the Prime Minister finds such utterances utterly inappropriate, to Dutch bebop and solo for cheeks and incisors. We catch up with Jaap Blonk today to talk about sound poetry, his own work, and what makes him tick and grunt and growl and make little duck sounds. Jaap, welcome.
Hi, Paul.
It's a delight to have you here. How did you end up doing a tour of the Northwest?
Oh, the invitation was from a festival in Calgary, WordFest. That actually they wanted me already last year, but that was rather short notice. I couldn't make it. So then, at an early stage, they said, "Well, let's make it 2012 then." And so I had a lot of time to find out if I could make it and build a little tour after the festival. So actually it could have been a much longer tour. There's currently a lot of interest in my work in the US, and well, I had another thing in Germany on the 29th of October, so I have to travel back on the 27th. But I find it very gratifying in these times to perform in the U.S.
And in the Northwest in particular, how are you finding your visit going? Is there a market here for sound, an audience for sound poetry?
Well, I don't know. I have no idea if there's a specific interest in sound poetry. People really appreciate my performances, which are not quite typical for sound poetry. Most sound poets don't improvise with the voice. They have their set pieces, and I am a vocal improviser too. So I improvise sometimes alone, sometimes with other vocalists or instrumentalists. And there are other vocal improvisers like Phil Minton or David Moss or. You name them.
Christian Bok.
No, he's a poet. He doesn't improvise. He's a poet and sometimes a sound poet. So there's a typical dividing line between vocal improvisers who improvise and do not write anything, and sound poets who write but don't improvise. So I'm in both categories. So it makes my field of performance wider. And I feel like sort of I've tried to get sound poets into improvising and sort of like doing a little thing together after doing solos, you know, at the end of a night. But mostly it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Do you think because people haven't done it before, they're a little afraid, they're self-conscious?
Well, improvisation is something that you have to have in your genes. You have to have been doing it for a long time, and if you some people can do it from the beginning that they have it, but if you don't have it and you don't want to do it, then it's no use. You're going to make a fool of yourself.
Yeah, this particular CD that you had for sale, that I bought a copy of. Mm-hmm. This is improvisation, is it not?
Yeah, this is total improvisation, yeah.
Can you tell us about the CD?
Well, this is a duo with Maya Ratje from Norway. And she approached me first in 2001 and sent me a recording with a Norwegian percussionist, Paul Nielsen Love. And she was still quite... not very sure of if her vocal improv meant anything, but I liked it a lot. So I said, "Yeah, well, great, go on." And then it happened that She's also a composer, a contemporary classical composer. So she was invited to this festival in Amsterdam where they played a piece of hers and in a lunch concert. And so I arranged for a space to do some recordings after that. And so we started to do some duos. And this went very well from the beginning. So later on we did other recordings. But of that first meeting, two pieces of landed on the CD also.
Nice. So,
and yeah, she's kind of a natural for that.
Do you remember the first time you discovered sound poetry? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this was back in 1977 when I was still doing mathematics in Utrecht University. But I was sort of on the edge of quitting that, and I was interested in poetry and music, also playing saxophone and looking for I took courses in more creative fields like dance, improvisation, drama, and there was also one in poetry recitation. And this teacher, he offered a lot of different stuff, a wide range from very classical poetry to experimental and even some sound poetry. So that's how I stumbled upon sound poetry. I particularly remember the one Zeepveertje und Flugfische of Hugo Ball from the Dada movement, which he recited himself at the Cabaret Voltaire in 1916. Seahorses and flying fish, like the beginning, Tresli, Betsli, Nebogen, Laila, Fushka, the Balber, Sakiti, Topiti, Betsli, Betsli, and so on. This one, I had a small presentation at the end of this workshop. I recited that poem among with some others, but this has always been one of my favorites. And then I went to look for more sound poetry, and yeah, it was a totally new field for me, sort of well, people call it maybe a no man's land between music and poetry, but for me it was a homeland where I felt very free and to intuitively first make performances of the old Dada sound poetry and then go on writing my own stuff.
Yeah. And, do you recall that feeling that you had? I picture it or envision it as an experience that you could feel in the middle of your chest, this joyous kind of sense of discovery.
Yeah, sure. It was certainly like that. I couldn't explain it in any way, but it felt very strong. Yeah.
What do you say when people think you've lost your mind? You know, I was, you know, explaining to my mother-in-law what I was doing tonight, going to interview this Dutch sound poet, Jaap Blanc. Had to say your name three or four times before it came across. And then I played a piece that you did over Skype for Portland, the John Cage peach, Nichi Koroka Nichi.
Yeah.
And it's a mantra, so it's said many times, so it's enough to drive somebody crazy. And she said, well, my first instinct is to laugh. And I said, you know, I think he would appreciate that reaction.
Oh, yeah. That's, laughing is a sort of a sense of freedom, I think. And, people can laugh, sure.
But they what about the people who think you're nuts? You know, your quote about people being arrested, the only art form that people would be arrested if they did it on a street corner. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, that's I have performed on street corners, and I've not been arrested, but I've seen police officers look at me and consider it for a while. What's this man? And I've seen mothers, children coming towards me and very interested in the mothers drawing them away. Oh, that's a madman. So it's just, of course, you can do abstract art on the street and people will know where to place that, or you can play atonal music on an instrument on the street. This is just about directness of sound poetry. It's a vocal utterance and a physical with our body. So it gets very, it's more direct. It gets closer to people than anything that where an instrument, be it a musical instrument or an instrument of painting or drawing or is involved.
You're making the kind of sounds that we might make to our, you know, 7-month-old child, or to a young person, or might make if we get a little drunk or something like that, and have great fun doing it. But when we see other people doing it, especially in public, we think there's something wrong, because maybe these are we've been taught to repress that, or what do you think?
No, Well, did you think there's something wrong when you saw me doing it on stage?
No, I actually could sense your feeling of joy and liberation. I mean, I was getting...
Yeah, yeah.
And then the first night at the Northwest Film Forum, mm-hmm. I wanted to join in. And, of course, we're in Seattle, and we're a very polite audience in Seattle. But then you offered us to join in.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I had more fun with that than anything, because you were doing the Mon Ray piece that was basically a redaction of mm-hmm. sound poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, living through the Bush administration and the mm-hmm. redaction that happened and all the
yeah.
censorship and what have you,
yeah.
I mean, it really struck a chord. And I have redaction in my own book
mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to mm-hmm. omit the name of a certain bureaucrat that I didn't want to identify, but yet I wanted to keep his email in my book.
Uh-huh.
So you were doing this piece where the redaction sounded like... You know, and then you offered the audience mm-hmm. to join in,
yeah,
and I just
yeah.
had a blast with it.
Yeah, I had a good support of that piece in the audience. Exceptional here in Seattle. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Well, there were several sound poets in the audience.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
For what it's worth, I don't know that the word got out, and the crowd was as big as it could have been, but. Mm-hmm. You know, there is an alternative poetry community and a sound poetry community here in this town,
yeah,
and it's an interesting kind of thing.